You're listening to LGRadio.online. I'm Leo Green. Welcome to In Conversation. As a kid and later on as an adult, I would often accompany my late father, Benny Green, when he would go to record his various radio or TV appearances. And today on LGRadio.online, I'm delighted to share with you one of the interviews he conducted many years ago towards the end of the last century. And so today's show comes from a chat he had with one of the pillars upon which the art of singing and the Great American Songbook has been built upon. Tony Bennett's catalogue of recordings reflect an extraordinary body of work. For a singer of these kinds of songs to have achieved the level of musical and historical significance that he has is, well, it's made all the more incredible when you consider that he had to stake his claim and establish his own cultural and musical identity at a time when the greatest exponents of his craft were also producing their seminal bodies of work. Nat King Cole, Mel Torme, Sammy Davis, and of course, Frank Sinatra, the man who declared Tony Bennett the best singer in the business. The conversation began with Tony describing his very first musical recollections, having grown up in a 1920s household in the Astoria neighborhood of Queens.
Well, there was an all-time music hall performer called Eddie Leonard years ago. It was way before my time, but my parents told me about it and taught me this song, Ida, Sweet as Apple Cider. And it would be like, Ida, sweet as apple, sop, wop, Ida. You know, I used to do that over and over again. And my family would come and help my mom out because she raised three children by herself and was in the garment industry. Sewing, and the whole Italian family, Italian Americans, they came over to help my mom. And every Sunday they'd create a circle with the guitars and mandolins and the family, and have my brother, my sister, and I perform for them every Sunday. And that's what we look forward to every Sunday.
As a teenager, Tony had begun cutting his vocal teeth in Ricardo's restaurant in Astoria.
Yes, I was a singing waiter, and but it was fun because we had two Irishmen as waiters, and they were so supportive. They were just like Edmund Gwen characters, you know, and they'd be jumping up and down because I'd come in and I'd say, "Quick, how does I'll Get By go?" And they would teach me I'll Get By. And I'd go through the swinging doors of the kitchen and come out and sing I'll Get By and get some extra money for doing the song besides serving the tables.
I'll get by.
Enjoying a trombone player one night at a local jazz club, Tony's enthusiasm didn't go unnoticed by the band leader.
Terry Glenn was the first guy to get me on the stage. He saw me enjoying him in a club called the Shangri-La right under the L train. And I was enjoying his music so much, he said, "Come on up, son, sing a song with us." And that was the first time I actually got on a jazz stage. And he was so nice to me. Yeah, I was just I was just standing at the bar enjoying it so much. He said, "Come on up and sing with us." I sang in the army. It's a long story, but what happened was I was a librarian in the army for a huge band, the American Forces Network, and it went all over Europe. And it was after the war was over, and we had to wait for points enough to get home when it was our turn to go home. So I was a librarian, and I loved it so much, and they allowed me to sing two songs every weekend from the Wiesbaden Concert Hall there, and it went all over Europe. And it was such a great experience, and beautiful musicians, and that I just said, I really got hooked. Then I really got hooked. I said, when I come out of the army, I don't want to do anything else. I'm going to stay with this. I joined, when I got back, there's a wonderful program that they had for the soldiers called the GI Bill of Rights, which allowed us to, any schooling that we had to make up for spending time in the army. So it was the American Theater Wing, and the school was so wonderful with the best teachers. I mean, the acting teacher I had was a secretary for Stanislavski, and I had a bel canto teacher for voice projection, And Mimi Spear, who was a great coach, that she was right on 52nd Street in a brownstone across the street. And she was the one who taught me. She said, don't imitate another singer. She said, imitate musicians. She said, like the names on these awnings, there was Art Tatum and Lester Young and George Shearing and Errol Garner. And they were all in Billie Holiday. But she said, don't imitate singers because you'll be one of the chorus. She said, imitate musicians. So I liked Art Tatum, the way he made a production out of a song. And I loved the sound, the honey sound of Stan Getz. I put those two together and got my own style that way. The musicians in those days would always encourage me. They'd say, you know, you're easy to play for because your body actions, the movements, we know just what accents you want and how to come in and when to come out and all this. And they were always very encouraging to me. But I lived in a city that's just outside of New York City, and all the workers live there, and having no idea there was an Al Cohn or Zoot Sims, and they would play on the weekends out there in Astoria where I lived. And I just thought they were just musicians that worked in these little clubs. I had no idea that they were famous jazz players. You know, musicians, don't forget that they're really scientists of the soul, because they don't have words. We have the beauty of words. With singers, it's a lot easier, and there's nothing more powerful than words. But with music, to communicate feeling, you really have to dig in, and so that it becomes honest and truthful. And musicians are the greatest teachers for doing that.
Oh, come fly with me. Come on, let's fly away.
Pearl Bailey started me out in the Village. You know, she put me on a show, and Bob Hope came in and saw me, put me on the Paramount Theater. And so that when Mitch Miller heard about that at Columbia Records, he had me do my first record. It was Boulevard of Broken Dreams. And it became a semi-hit, enough for me for the first time to go to Buffalo and Cleveland and Allentown, Pennsylvania, and Cleveland, you know, and Acton and all that. Not Acton, I'm sorry, you know, but all these tiny towns. And it was enough to just break in and become a performer. And I've been performing ever since. I've been on the road ever since.
I walk along the street of sorrow, the boulevard of broken dreams.
Well, you know, see, I was criticized because, once again, Mimi Spear, who taught me to just imitate musicians. So because of Tatum, I did something that was unheard of in those days, because like Al Bolling or Jack Leonard, who sang with Tommy Dorsey, or Dick Haymes or Sinatra, they, because of dancing, they had to all sing this nice sweet line so that everybody could flow with a nice foxtrot. Well, here I come along, this young Italian kid, and here it's half jazz and half bel canto, you know. So a lot of musicians would say to me, what are you doing, you know, because I would be singing dramatically, and they never heard this, you see. Now anything goes, you know, thank God, this is the way it is. But in those days, I mean, I was really breaking a rule. I wasn't supposed to sing that way. But Boulevard of Broken Dreams, I noticed, would get the audience, you know, because it told a story, and I was getting dramatic. So it became like a storytelling kind of experience.
Boulevard of Broken Dreams was followed in 1951 by the ballad Because of You, which would give Tony his first million-selling hit. That was followed by a Hank Williams classic, which Tony re-recorded for a reflective 1971 released album.
Mitch Miller was the first musician I know of to realize that there was gold in the hills of Nashville country music because of one brilliant man. His name was Hank Williams. Mitch had me record Cold, Cold Heart. Here it is 20 years later, and the song still feels brand new. Well, I tried so hard, my dear, to show that you're my every dream. Yet you're afraid each thing I do is just some evil scheme. A memory from your lonesome past keeps us so far apart. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart? Another love before my time made your heart sad and blue. And now my heart is paying for the things I didn't do. In anger, unkind words are said that make teardrops start. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart.
That was Mitch Miller's suggestion for Tony. The conversation then turned to the great and, since this interview, unfortunately, the now late Ralph Sharon, one of music's greatest accompanying piano players and arrangers.
Ralph, well, he's been with me now for 40 years, on and off, mostly on. He's just great. He's a great colleague, and he's got such good taste about what the audience should have, and he's got such humor, you know. He's very funny, and he knows how to do it. He's very natural about it, and he's very spontaneous. He insists on even rehearsals being spontaneous, and he considers it tedious if it's overdone, you know, if rehearsals are overdone. He wants it just to be thought about and then just attack, you know. It's, and he's really right. That's true improvisation, you know. Ralph really changed my career, because the first couple of hits I had were Because of You and Blue Velvet and Cold, Cold Heart and all this. So they were sweet, and the record company said, don't change your style. This is selling now. Now just sing this way. But Ralph was astute enough to realize that if I kept singing that way, after about 7 records, the axe would drop, and then that would be it for Tony Bennett. And he said, come on, he said, you have a jazz feel. He said, sing some jazz also. He said, don't just sing these sweet songs, because everybody's accusing you of being too saccharine. So he came up with this album, which is going to be re-released this year. It's called The Beat of My Heart, and it was all drums with flautist Herbie Mann and Kay Winding, but the drummers were Chico Hamilton and Joe Jones and Candido and Billy Exner and, oh gosh, and Sabu and all these great drummers. And it was such a departure that all of a sudden I got this whole jazz audience that said, we didn't know he swung like this, you know. And so it really taught me to be very unpredictable, never to do the same album twice, you know, just... So it stays interesting for everybody.
It was just one of those things, just one of those crazy flings.
Ralph Sharon had another suggestion for Tony, and it proved to be a masterful one.
I was in Hot Springs, Arkansas, the land of President Clinton, and we were working in this nice little nightclub there, a sweet place that later on I found out President Clinton told me that he when he was going to college, he used to sit and just look from the outside of the club and listen to me singing with the group. And we were on our way to San Francisco for the first time. And Ralph said, you know, he said, it's a very strange city, San Francisco. He said, it's a lovely kind of European type city in the United States. He said, but a bit snobbish. And he said, you have to do something to communicate with them, he said, because they feel you're an outsider if you don't connect with them. So he said, a friend of mine, Douglas Cross and George Corey, they used to hang out with Billie Holiday. And they wrote a song called Deep Love for Billie. And they used to just be with her day and night. And he said, they wrote this song called I Left My Heart in San Francisco. He said, let's do that and show them that we like their city. So the bartender was the first one to tip us off. You know, he heard us rehearsing. He said, by the way, he said, I don't mean to interrupt your rehearsal. He said, but if you ever record that song, you're going to have a customer here. He said, I'm definitely going to buy that record. So we forgot about that. It was nice that he said that. And we got to San Francisco. Well, then there was a mad rush. Everybody said, you must record this song immediately. Figuring it would be a local hit. And it's become my signature song. And I've been commissioned to sing it all over the world ever since. And it was just one of those wonderful, fortunate accidents that happened. And it's given me so many rewards. The greatest one I've ever received of any of the accolades I've ever received was in the New York Times when the boys were in Vietnam waiting to come home and very beaten up and very homesick, sitting around a fire, and they were all singing I Left My Heart in San Francisco. That did it for me.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care, my love waits there in San Francisco. Above the blue and windy sea, when I come home to you, San Francisco.
Song suggested by Tony's piano player, Ralph Sharon, bringing this edition of In Conversation with me, Leo Green, to a close. Please do visit our website, lgradio.online, to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our shows. Thanks for listening.